At the start of the 20th century, cars began increasing in number. As cars became more affordable and more common, obviously, there became more of them. And as a result of that, there was more and more cars on the roads. The streets got busier and busier. And as you'd expect, the more cars there are on the roads, guess what? The more accidents there were on the roads as well. Can we just close the door? Is that okay, by the way? The more accidents there were. But there was a problem. If you were in an accident with a car and it drove off, how were you able to tell anyone whose car it was? Especially if that car was a Ford, because as Henry Ford famously said when he started selling them, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. So it became necessary for a method to be created to identify cars, who they belonged to more specifically. And in 1903, the Motor Car Act was passed in the UK. Reckless driving became illegal. Isn't it strange that before then, reckless driving was not illegal? Licenses for driving were brought in, and so were registration plates for every car. By 1904, every car had to have a number plate on it that corresponded to its registration. The very first registration number was very simple and bold, and it was A1. Can you show the picture of that car for me, please? Registered this guy, Earl Russell. That's the very first registration plate, A1. And that's Earl Russell right there. He wanted A1 so very badly, he camped out outside the night before to get it. In many ways, he was the inventor of this idea of having a personalized number plate. One that, in the years to come, many great men have followed. Can I just ask, who's got a personalized number plate? Well, you owe Earl Russell, who came up with the idea of doing that. He also was pretty much the inventor of this idea of camping out outside a shop the night before so that you can be the first to get the newest thing. Number plates have very strict rules on them. You can't rearrange the letters and the numbers. They have to be correctly spaced and easy to read, and they have to be firmly attached, and if any of those conditions are not met, you will fail your MOT. In other words, you need a clear and blatant sign on who that car belongs to. They identify who owns the car. Which brings us to today's message. What is it that shows everyone clear and blatantly who you belong to? What is it that shows the people you meet who you belong to? What is it that identifies you? What is it that makes you unique and different? What is it that displays that you are holy? Set apart from this world for God. Can people spend time with you and at the end of that time with you go away and go, that person belongs to Jesus? With so many faiths and, no, hang on, that's too politically correct, let me. With so many false religions, there is an external indicator as to what you belong to. Sometimes it's through what you wear, covering your entire body. Sometimes it's to how your beard's worn. It's easy to see, for many people, what false religion they belong to. But Christianity doesn't really have that. Because God is more concerned with our hearts than what's going on and what we wear. But the number plates aren't there so God can see. The number plates are there so other people can see. You know, it's not like we all walk around with fish shaved into the back of our hair, or a cross on the back of our hair. Oh, it's not like we all walk around wearing dog collars. By the way, when I was a naive young Christian, I thought it would be very cool if I had a cross shaved into the back of my head. Boy, I looked stupid. In fact, I don't think the hairdresser particularly understood what I was going for, because it didn't look like the Christian cross, it looked more like the Red Cross. And it just must have looked like I was really devoted to first aid, but never mind. But really, what does the external show? That you conform to a certain way of dressing, really? And you see that when it's about what you wear, there's no way of knowing whether you're wearing this because it's your choice or that somebody's making you wear it. You don't know. It doesn't show the heart, does it? So how can we tell? Is it that you go to church on a Sunday? Is that what makes you different to everybody else, where you spend a few hours, hopefully twice, on a Sunday? I know it's obvious, but going to church is not what makes you a Christian, is it? I also, as well as come here, quite often go to McDonald's on a Sunday. That does not make me a Big Mac. It is starting to make me look like a Big Mac. But that's a whole other thing. Now, I don't want to say church attendance isn't, of course, a factor, because after all, if you want a Big Mac, I know where you can find them. Just as if you want to find a Christian on a Sunday, I know where you can find them. But that isn't really what makes us stand out. Is it that you swear less than everybody else? Or cheat less? Or lie less? Sorry, not less. I mean, not at all. Is it that? Is that the difference between you and everybody else? I'm sure at some point you've been in church where somebody has asked you this question. If it was a crime to be a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? But I think that's a little easy. Because if you're going to get a conviction, you're going to have some serious investigation going on. Let me tell you, when someone starts investigating, they'll find stuff because they want to convict. So let me broaden that a little bit. If it was a crime to be a Christian, would there be enough evidence to even bring you in for questioning? Let alone convict. Would there be enough evidence to make you a person of interest? I would hope that the answer is yes. But I tell you, it's a question worth confronting, isn't it? This series is your MOT. What do we mean by this? Well, it's the things you need to keep a check on. Things that it's good to take some time and check that they're present and they're correct. And if they are, if everything we shared during this series you're getting right, wonderful. But if they're not, it's good to know adjustments need to be made. It's all about maintenance. And that's really what I want to ask this morning. Are your number plates attached? Are they clear and are they easy to read? I am not meant to be telling you anything you don't already know this morning. This is a check to see if what you know has been applied. Because when things don't get checked, they stop working. We learned this the hard way with our boiler. Supposed to check those every year. We didn't check ours 10 years. So when we finally did get them to come and check it, they did took one look at it and were like, well, that needs to be condemned. yeah. They were quite surprised we were still alive, actually. What is the greatest indication of who you belong to? There's two main passages that I want to look at this morning. We'll touch on some others, but there's two main ones. And the first is in John 13, verse 31 to 35, and it should be behind me as I read. Now when he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." How will people know who you belong to? Very simple. Love for one another. And I wonder how high a priority we actually place on this. When people look at you or look at the church, what do they see? Do they see love? Or do they see friction and enmity? Do they see unity? Or do they see disharmony? If they look at you and how you are with the people around you in the church, what do they see? See, we might say we love one another, but do we? When God's people are filled with God's love for each other, then I tell you, people take notice. But I tell you, when they see us fighting and cold to one another, they also take notice. They also take note of that. I don't want that. Jesus made love for each other as one of our chief identifiers. It is our number plates. If our desire is for our church to grow and see more people saved and more people in it, then let me tell you, our love for one another has to grow too. See, we can teach everything you want. We can get all of this stuff right. We can have great teaching. We can have passionate music. We can have amazing times of worship. We can have the best social action you can imagine. We can be feeding the hungry. We can be doing outreach. We can be seeing miracles in church. We can be doing signs and wonders and people getting out of wheelchairs. We can have a structure in place. That means when somebody gets out of a wheelchair, they get discipled. We can get all of that in place. But if we have not love, 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1 to 3 says, "Though I speak in the tongues of angels, of men and angels, but have not love, I am a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand, not just some, but all mysteries and knowledge, and though I have faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing." Those things Paul's talking about in that passage are extremely powerful, extremely worthwhile things. Speaking in tongues, prophecy, understanding, faith enough to move a mountain, feeding the poor, and being willing to sacrifice your life, all of those things. If a Christian church has those things in place, we would say they're doing well. But love is better. We could be getting all of those things right. We could be seeing people healed every week. Those things are significant, they're world-changing, but without love, they're nothing. Nothing. If we did all that stuff as a church, I tell you what, you'd make the news. You'd look great. But without love, you're just a clanging... I really thought that was going to be louder than that, but never mind. Jesus said this was a new commandment. Which seems odd initially, because love has always been one of the main commandments right throughout the Old Testament, right throughout Jesus' teaching. But here's the difference. Previously, it was love your neighbor as yourself. Now that, in itself, is a pretty high standard, isn't it? To love your neighbor as yourself? Because I don't know about you, loving yourself comes pretty easy. That sounded bad, but you know what I mean. I'm not suggesting we all have egos, but I'm saying your chief concern usually is for yourself. And he's saying, have that for your neighbor. But what Jesus does here with this new commandment is he raises the level. He raises the stakes. First of all, he says, specific focus, one another. But second, he raises the level. It's not as you love yourself, but as Christ has loved you. As he has loved us. Guess what? That's more than you love yourself. He loves you more than you love you. And you meet some people, you wonder how that's possible, but it is. He loves you more than you love you. He loves you an extraordinary amount. A sacrificial amount. An amount that he got on a cross and suffered and died for. How is our love for one another? Is it sacrificial? Are we willing to sacrifice things out of love for one another? Or is your experience of church all about you? Is it about you? Or is it about everybody else? Often we hear messages about how we need to love the lost. And we do. Don't get me wrong. But Jesus' focus here is that we love each other. That's the way we build the right kind of church. Now, I'm not saying loving each other is more important than loving the lost, but let me tell you, if you ain't getting it right in here, you ain't getting it right out there. We are bound together. Bound in love. Brothers and sisters. Matthew 25, verses 35 to 40, says this. Jesus says this. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did you see a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to the least one of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Now don't misunderstand what I'm going to say here. We should feed and care for the broken and the lost and the poor. Absolutely. But when Jesus said this, the least of my brothers, you did it to him. He's talking about the family of God. He's talking about this community, this ecclesia, this church. He's talking about how you treat other Christians. You see, it's okay to say we love each other, but this stuff shows that love is real. Because love isn't a feeling. Oh, I tell you what. If I could destroy every greeting card, the whole industry. Love is not greeting card love. Love is not hearts. It is not emotion. Love is a choice and love is an action. When you look at it in the dictionary, there's a little V next to it. That means it's a verb. Is that right? Verb. That means it's a doing word. Love isn't something you feel. Love is something you do. Love is action. And Jesus said, whatever you did to them, you did to him. even the least of them, even the ones you don't like. And he's talking here about positive things, giving a drink, visiting the sick, but I tell you what, this applies just as much in the negative. Whenever you've pulled down, slandered, and despised the least of your brothers, you did it to him. When you're tearing other Christians down, you're tearing him down. When you're muttering about other Christians behind their back, you're doing it to him. Say this, community of love is what church is, or what church should be. You know, it's getting more and more popular nowadays to think you don't need church. It's not important. We forget, of course, that church was God's idea. And maybe you can survive without church. Maybe, yeah. Maybe you can be okay. Maybe you can survive without a family. You can get by without a family. Although, I've got to say, when you're very young, getting by without a family is pretty tough. You could get by without a family, but I tell you, it's not the same quality of life that you'd get when you are in a caring, nurturing, protecting environment. And yeah, sometimes families can be challenging. I'm sure sometimes I'm a very big challenge to my family. But you stick with them. You stick with them. See, in the modern world, we focus a lot on having a personal relationship with God. And I get why we do this, because it used to be about, if you were born in this country, you were a Christian. But this is more about personal, personal, personal. And personal is true. That is what you need. But don't misunderstand the word personal. Personal is not the same as isolated. And in our world today, that is basically, we're not a, I don't think we're even a society anymore. We're just a loose collection of individuals who sometimes agree and mostly don't. Personal is not the same as isolated. Personal means you have to have a relationship with him. But let me tell you, you were not saved in isolation, and you don't live your life in isolation. And let me tell you, when you get to the kingdom, you are not going to be in isolation. You are not going to spend all your time in heaven, just you and God walking hand in hand. Sorry. He saved you to be part of something bigger than that. He saved you to be part of his family, part of his kingdom. While your faith must be individual, your walk cannot be. That's why I really believe it should be tremendously hard to leave a church. Listen, if all you're leaving is a meeting that you turn up to once in a week and a group of people you nod at and say hello, it's easy. Easy. Because there's no sense of loss. What have you really lost? But leaving your family, that is a heartbreaking thing to do. And it should never, ever be something that's done lightly. And I understand there's occasions where it happens. Look, if I was had to move to Cape Town, obviously, if God calls me to Cape Town, there's a separation between me and my family. I'm not going to Cape Town, by the way, don't worry. It's a nice place, though. Yeah. But it should never be easy. The connection you have to your local body should never be tenuous. It should never be light. It should never be fragile. Let me tell you, I can't imagine ever leaving this place. Can't imagine it. Sure, there's sometimes you go home and you go, oh, that's it. But I can't really ever picture not being here. That was one of the biggest stresses for me when I felt God was calling me to ministry. I don't want to go to another church, Lord. I'm so glad he was calling me here. I can't ever picture not being part of this. It's not something I treat lightly. And I don't understand when we do. And that's not to say God won't ever move me on. I don't want to limit what God's got. What I'm trying to say is being part of this matters deeply to me. Deeply. A And it should for all of us. Leaving church should be a hard thing to do. Let me tell you, it should never ever happen via text message. That's just, really? It meant that much? Jesus raised the level of love. This isn't the sentimental kind of love. This isn't the greeting card kind of love. This is greater than that. This is far more noble than that. This is not a love of words, but a love in deeds. Sacrificial. Active. Mutual. You know, the church has a very common complaint. It's almost like the common cold within churches. In fact, the common cold is a good name for it. You'll hear this time and again. I'm sure you've heard it at some point. There's no love in that church. There's no love amongst those people. That church isn't loving. Church isn't loving each other. You know, most of the time, what that really means is, I'm not feeling my share of the love here. This place feels cold around me. When we talk about the lack of love in church, usually we talk about what we feel and ignore what we are doing. Because the remedy to a cold church is simple. If the church is called on love, you warm it up. You warm it up. Because love catches. You are not an outsider. You're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution to the problem. When you aren't feeling loved, love. When people are suspicious of you, love them. When people don't show it back, love them. When people don't come to you, go to them. Because part of the problem is we put the responsibility on everybody else when actually the responsibility is on us. Now it needs to be love that's more than the surface. It needs to be a genuine, genuine love. Which is why the second passage I want to look at is really going to dig into. And it's from the book of Romans. We'll not turn to it just yet, but it's from the book of Romans. And it's entitled, helpfully, I love these little subheadings that we get in our Bibles. I'll just tell you what the next bit's going to be. This one is entitled, The Marks of a True Christian. You've got to love a passage that's going to follow that, haven't you? And as we look at this passage, you know, we can look at it and go, this is what our number plates should look like. This isn't a lofty golden standard, unattainable by mere mortals. No, no, this is the place we should be living our life. Now, before we read it, a little explanation here. Who looked in the mirror this morning before they came out of the house? Come on, be honest, be honest. Most of us, and I'm suspicious on those whose hands didn't get raised. We don't look in the mirror because we like what we see. We look in the mirror so we can see what we look like. Let me tell you, if we don't look in the mirror, we won't see the wrinkles. We won't see the spots. We won't see, whoa, my hair needs doing. I used to have a thing when I was younger. Whenever there was an important day coming up in the preceding weeks, I would always develop what I would call my special occasion spot. And I would keep checking it and then run up to these big days, hoping it would be gone, but mostly it would not. Both my graduation photo, there's my graduation photo there. You see it? That's my special occasion spot right there. Always the same place. We got my wedding photo next. There it is. All Often I look a little unshaven. That's part of the reason why. No, it's not. My special occasion spot, I tell you, it was always present and correct. Okay, we can get rid of that now, thank you. But that's why we look in a mirror, not because we love what we see, but so we can see how we look. So when we look in the mirror, we can go, that needs dealing with, that needs combing, maybe that needs a little bit of concealer. Not that I wore concealer on my wedding day, but I did. You look sometimes in the mirror and you see something that needs changing, yeah? You look in the mirror and you see there's a little bit of something that needs adjustment there. That's okay. If we didn't look, we wouldn't realize our hair needs doing. So, the reason I'm going into that is, I think this passage is a little bit like looking in the spiritual mirror. Because you can read it and you can go, whoa. I'm not matching up to that. That's okay. We're looking in the mirror to see what needs adjusting. Romans 12, verses 9 to 21. So it's okay as we read this if you go, whoa. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. How's the mirror looking? Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. How's the mirror looking? Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine and I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That is what a true Christian looks like. I wonder, when we look in that mirror, how we look. Genuine love, not superficial love. Genuine heartfelt for your brothers and sisters in Christ. Not using them to advance yourself so that you can develop. Or not using them as a crutch so you can feel better, but genuine love for them. Hating evil, both in your own life and in the world. Holding tight to what is good. Outdoing one another with goodness and honor. You know, we don't encourage competitiveness in church, but I am going to encourage some competitiveness. Because competitiveness can lead to rivals and dispute. This is a good competition. I challenge you, outdo one another in showing honor. When someone shows honor to you, beat them. Outdo them. See, that's one of those competitions where everybody wins. Full of zeal and passion, blessing people who try to persecute you. Blessing them and not fighting with them, not cursing them. Dear me, that's hard, yeah? Constant in prayer. Oh, here's a one. Patient in hard times. How are we doing in the mirror? Any spots? Anybody's hair need doing? We help out people who are in need. We contribute to needs within the church. And we show hospitality to each other. Is your house a fortress or a commune? Rejoicing with those who rejoice. Weeping with those who weep. Live in harmony with each other. Oh, here's a good one. Don't think you're too clever. Don't get back at people who wrong you. Never seek revenge or get in even. Can I say, this isn't the standard for other people in the room. This is the standard for you. Those are the marks of a true Christian. I tell you what, when you look in that mirror, it can be a hard read. There's things we need to work on, but I tell you, all of that stuff comes down to one thing. One thing. Love. Love for each other. Love for God. And love for the lost. Work out love. And all of those things fall into place. So how can we know if we are loving each other? We might say it, but how do we know if we're doing it? Well, here's a wonderful guide. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 8. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures. How much? All things. Love never ends. Let me ask you, church. Do we love each other? Or are we a collection of individuals? I like to say individuals. You've got to be pretty stupid to want to live like that. We can use this passage to ask ourselves some very searching questions. See, love is patient. When someone's let you down, disappointed you, how'd you handle it? Are we patient with each other? Or do we just get frustrated with each other and wind each other up? Love is kind. Do you shoot people down? Do you regard the feelings of other people when you say something? When someone's having a hard time, do you care? There's occasions I've heard of people in church who've gone through some very hard times. Seasons where they've been so low, and God's brought them through it. But each time we hear something like that and you didn't know about it, you didn't know they were going through it, it bothers me. Where were we? Where were we? See, if we're loving like the Bible said, then nobody in church would ever have to go through stuff like that alone. Ever. Unless they choose to. And there is a, you know, if something's not shared, it can't be helped. But nobody should ever have to go through something alone. Now that doesn't mean, at the same time, nobody wants everybody coming round. But we should never have to go through that alone. Love doesn't envy. Can we say that? Are you envious of anyone in church? Envy just churns you up on the inside. It makes enemies where there are no enemies. I think also connected in many ways to envy is boasting. Are you boasting about what you're doing for God? Are you the one who always makes sure everybody knows exactly what you're doing and that your achievements are better than everybody else's achievements. Are you the only person doing it right? Often when I hear conversations about what's wrong with church, it's amazing how often the person who's leading the conversation is the one who's getting it right. They're all getting it wrong. I'm getting it right. Boasting's like the opposite of envy. Often you think the opposite's good, but actually in this case, they're just as bad as each other. You could tie arrogance into that one as well. Love is not arrogant. Love is not about what you are doing. That's not just as individuals, that's also as a church. When a church moves in arrogance, the church starts saying this: we are the only church in this area that's preaching the gospel. We are the only church where the Holy Spirit is. We are the only church here who loves. It's only here that you will see miracles. When you hear a church talking like that, don't get excited, get cautious. Love is not arrogant, and neither is a loving church. Love is not rude. Now, let's be very careful with this one, because this word rude can mean several things. The Greek word means acting improperly or dishonoring, to disgrace. Are you rude to your brothers and sisters? Do you dishonor them in the way you act or the way you speak to them? Do you speak to them like they're worth less than you? Do you shoot them down without a second thought? Because that's just rude. Love's not rude. What also is rude and dishonoring is pulling people apart on Facebook. Don't do it. Don't do it. Somehow we sometimes think because it's typed and not said, it doesn't exist in the same way it does. You don't need to just watch your tongue, you need to watch your thumb. Gossip is speaking negatively about people behind their backs. It's rude. It's dishonoring. Gossip is just a lie that hasn't grown up yet. Putting people down behind their back, saying that they're no good, spreading talk about them, let me tell you, that is not how love operates. Love does not insist on its own way. Are you pushy? Are you controlling? Has it got to be your way or the highway? When someone in church is going in a direction you wouldn't go in, but it's not heresy, it's not sin, it's just different to you, do you insist that you make sure you do all you can to make sure they're doing it your way? Has everything got to be done the way you'd do it? Pushy. Love is not irritable. Is there someone in here, or in church, who just plain winds you up the wrong way? Maybe it's just something about them that makes you just, ooh. Maybe it's their personality. Maybe it's something they did to you in the past that you keep remembering. What it does is it makes you snappy and short-tempered with them. It makes you irritated by them. Sometimes all they need to do is walk in the room and your mood changes like that. It's not love. Love is not resentful. And you could tie this in with the last one, maybe. Holding on to something about someone just builds this feeling of dislike and resentment. People say you can love someone and not like them. You ever heard that? I love them, but I don't like them. Well, love's not resentful. So that doesn't work, so shut up. Sorry, I'm being pushy. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It is not secretly satisfied when something bad happens to somebody else, like that person who really winds you up. It does not lead people into bad things. It doesn't lead people astray because it rejoices in the truth. There is no deception in love. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Do you know what that means? Love doesn't give up on people, even though people are really easy to give up on sometimes. If we love each other, we do not give up. We don't get to the point where we're done. Even if somebody really upsets us all, walks out of this place and we don't see them for years, love wouldn't hold anything against them when they come back in. Love would give them a hug. Yeah? We don't give up. We don't get to the point where we're done. We don't stop hoping. We don't stop believing for one another. Even when someone is just repeatedly kicking grace in the face again and again and again, we don't give up. Because we believe and we hope for better. When someone in the church hits their lowest point, love's not finished with them. Love's not done. Because love believes and hopes change is going to come. There's no end. There's no limit. That's love. And that is how people recognize who you belong to. If they see bitterness, if they see coldness, if they see hardness, let me tell you, they won't see God. If they see backbiting and gossip, they won't see God. Love is how people will see we're different. Jesus said, by this, all people will know you are my disciples. If you have love for one another. Notice he said, if. This doesn't come without you choosing for it to come. By your love for one another, people will know God is real. How? How are they going to see it? How are they going to know you love each other? Let me tell you, if you just feel nice feelings towards each other, they can't see that. Nobody can see an emotion, but they can see action. Love must be lived out. Love must have action. Love must be in word and in deed. And that is how people see who you belong to. Jesus didn't just ask us to love. He asked us to love as he's loved. What a standard. What a standard. I wonder this morning, how are your number plates? Are they clear? Are they easy to read? Does that screw need tightening up a little bit and the dirt needs washing off?